im Free Speech Zelt. Und zwar zu Gast bei mir Erich Möchel und Fiona Steinert. Ich darf beide vorstellen. Fiona Steinert kommt vom Freien Wiener Radio, Radio Orange, und sie vertritt heute Brian Carthy, und er wäre der General Secretary von der Organisation AMAG gewesen, die Weltorganisation der Community Radios. Fiona Steinert wird uns sozusagen einen Überblick bieten über Freiradioszene, über Freiradios im internationalen Kontext, und wir wollen dann auch Verbindungen herstellen zu Erich Möchel. Denn Erich Möchel ist einerseits bei ORF Online Future Zone, aber auch bei Quintessenz. Quintessenz ist ein kritischer E-Mail-Dienst, und im Rahmen dieses kritischen E-Mail-Dienst Quintessenz ist der Herausgeber der E-Mail-Newsletter Kutepesche. Und er wird über dieses und seine Projekte ebenfalls sprechen, das heißt, wir stellen Vergleiche an. Und für alle Hörerinnen und Hörer, wie gehabt in den letzten Tagen, nachdem Radio Froh das offizielle Ars Radio ist und bei der Ars Electronica natürlich entsprechend viele internationale Gästinnen und Gäste hier in Linz sind, wollen wir natürlich, dass auch die mitbekommen, worüber wir reden. Deshalb werden wir die Diskussion wiederum auf Englisch führen mit dem ein oder anderen deutschen Zwischensatz für alle, die des Englischen nicht mächtig sind. Jedenfalls jetzt noch die Aufforderung: Das Wetter ist noch nicht so schlecht, als dass man es nicht wagen könnte, hier zum Ars Corner zu kommen, in das Free Speech Zelt. Es sind noch einige wenige Plätze frei. Das heißt, für alle Hörerinnen und Hörer zu Hause, wenn Sie Ihr Englisch verbessern wollen, wir haben eine englische Diskussion, und wenn Sie live dabei sein wollen, hier im Ars Corner, schauen Sie noch vorbei. Es sind noch Plätze frei, die Diskussion wird sicher interessant werden. Und ganz kurz, bevor wir beginnen, gebe ich noch einen Überblick über die kommenden drei Diskussionen, die es noch während des Tages geben wird. Im Anschluss um 15.30 Uhr Konsortium Netzkultur mit Winfried Fritsch und Gabi Kepplinger, der Präsidentin der Stadtwerkstatt. Um 16 Uhr Convergence in Europe mit Paul Murschitz, Public Voice Lab aus Österreich, und Erich Kluitenberg aus den Niederlanden. Und um 18 Uhr noch einmal eine große Diskussionsrunde zum Thema Free Speech mit dem Titel Free Speech, Free Market, Media Policy in the UE, European Community. So, und jetzt gehen wir in den englischen Teil über, wir stürzen uns rein. May I introduce Fiona Steinert? She's representing today the AMAG, because the head of AMAG was not able to come today, and she's from Radio Orange in Vienna, and she joined us today, and we are going to talk about free speech in a worldwide view, and then probably we can make comparisons with the free speech based on radios compared with free speech based on internet. And from the internet section, we can say is Erich Möchel, and he writes for ORF Online for the Future Soon, and he also brings out a newsletter, is publishing a newsletter, and that's called Kutepesche, from the critical email project Quintessenz, we can say that. I start with Erich. Erich, please, can you tell us something about what's going on in the internet community in Austria, especially focused on Quintessenz, on your newsletter?
Yeah, there are a few things we should sort out before. I'm here as my job is doing the IT news section of ORF Online. This is called Future Zone, but I'm in no way a representative of ORF radio or even TV here.
So me too, not.
Yeah. Right. So the other thing is, I happen to be one of the founders of an Austrian civil rights organization that's called Quintessence, and that has been on the net from mid of 94 about. We happen to be founding members of the Global Internet Liberty Campaign, that is a very loose coalition of about 50 or 60 groups worldwide, and I just seen the public, a member of another GILC group of Internet Society Bulgaria, hello. Well, the two main issues, GILC members, nobody's entitled to speak for GILC. This is just a loose coalition, so all we do is, if there is a case of severe, of possible censorship on the net, if there is a case on other infringements of our civil rights, we join together on our mailing list, discuss the thing, prepare declarations, and different members from different countries give support to the campaign or do not. Our latest campaign, it dates back to June, and it was a campaign by one of our French members called Iris, and it had the support of about 25 other member groups, and it was on civil rights and on preventing of censorship.
And this was, I think that there came out a statement about civil rights, about net rights.
It was about the new French law proposal that was, well, let's see. This law proposal would have had a severe impact on the right of free speech on the net. As you see, there is everywhere in the world, there are new laws are being made. New laws concerning the internet, new laws concerning all new media. In any of these laws, in the Austrian law proposals as well, you have those formulations where they say, well, there is some content we don't like to have on the net. And most of the time, it is not said, this is some kind of we call it in a rough translation, we call it rubber paragraphs you could use for anything, you could use for preventing any free flow of information, depending what you understand on dangerous content. What is dangerous that should be forbidden? There is also a EU law proposal, one of several, and it always comes from the same angle: how to prevent dangerous and I don't know how they formulated exactly, but it's about those things, what they call child pornography, what they call neo-Nazi content on the web, what they call anarchist materials. Well,
there is a different view, we have to say, between America and the European community about free speech in the net.
Yeah, it's easy to say. I can tell it to you in a very simple example. For example, our French friends, they're all coming from the traditional left. The German members of the Global Internet Liberty Campaign are also from another angle, and they sometimes defend. There are some laws, as well as in Austria, in Germany too, against neo-Nazism. So these laws would prevent that these materials, and this is in the discussion right now, should go onto the net, should be forbidden. In the US, our member, one of the largest groups in the GILC, the American Civil Liberties Union, 200,000 members and really some power in the States, they don't like neo-Nazis, but their definition of free speech includes that, because they say with some there is sense in it. They just start there forbidding things and they will, if they have started, use this as an example and forbid everything they don't like on the net. And this is one thing, in my opinion, that has been undervalued in the last weeks and months of debate in Germany and in Austria concerning neo-Nazi contents on the net.
Let me stop here and introduce now Fiona in the talk. Fiona, for what does AMAG stand for? And maybe we can afterwards make a comparison between what is meant under free speech in the contents of net and compared with the radio, the free radio scene in Europe and Austria.
Yeah, first of all, I have to say that I'm not really representing AMAG. But what I can do today is talk about my experiences, or also the experiences of Radio Orange in Vienna, and also give a short overview of what AMAG is doing and what the structure of AMAG is, as far as I know it. AMAG stands for the Worldwide Association of Community Radio Broadcasters, and it was founded, I don't know the exact year, but in 1980-something in Canada during the first conference of community radio broadcasters. And since then, every year, every second year, there has been another conference where people from all over the world met and started to exchange their experiences from their different countries. In the meantime, there are several offices in the different continents. There's one office in Latin America, one, as I said before, in Canada, which is the World Office. There is another one in Africa, and there is one in Europe, which is AMAG Europe, where we, of course, have most connections to. And what AMAG is doing is, I would say, different fields, areas of work. One part is a solidarity network, which means to try to have an overview of what is going on in different countries and help radios or projects, media projects that are endangered due to different stuff like war situations, like legal changes, etc. Then there's also a number of networking projects on certain issues. I would say that the biggest project is the anti-racism project, which is called Voices Without Frontiers, where one main event is once a year a big 24 hours broadcast about anti-racism and about anti-racist issues. That is brought together by different by radios from all over the world, and then rebroadcasted by the internet and by satellite. So yeah, I would say that's perhaps a short overview of what AMAG is doing.
Erich told us about the difference between Europe and America in the situation of the internet. And what's the definition of free radio stations in Austria, in the Austrian contents?
That is one main point about the World Association. Of course, there are many, many different kinds of so-called free radios. They are not every time they are called free radios, but they are called independent radios, community radios, etc. And of course, there are not only different names, but also different concepts of and approaches to the radio. I think the main common basis these radios are built upon is to fight for the right of freedom of expression, and to fight for the right to communicate. So not only to have the right to receive information, but also to send it and to produce contents and be in power of the infrastructure to use media and to broadcast contents. The definition of free radio in Austria, I would say there are two main points. One point is open access, which means what I just said. People should be in power of broadcasting. They should have the possibility to use the media. And the second point for us is that these projects are non-commercial projects, which means they don't want to have their contents dictated by the market. Like commercials would be to have commercials in your program and do your financing by selling commercials would be a way of influencing the contents you can produce in your radio.
So I think that brings us to a very interesting point, which is a link between net and between radios, and that goes more or less into a content of censorship too. I think free radios, that depends always from the system. We know it, for example, from Yugoslavia, from the former Yugoslavia, where B92 was cancelled on air when the war started. And I think on the net we have quite the same problems going on, for example, in China, we all know. But what's going on in Europe, in Austria, with censorship on the net?
Well, there is this good old game of censorship busting on the net. A global coalition like GILC is, well, there is not much of structures. There's not much of, I don't know, general secretaries and so on and so on. But we have always the possibility to reduplicate contents that have been made unavailable on the net by, I don't know, by police in one country. So you can, it's the other side of the medal, what we see now with neo-Nazi contents. They place the contents on US-based servers, so German jurisdiction has no chance. Well, some people say this is the bad side of the net because it allows this and that. On the other hand, you can use it the other way around too. Just to tell an example. 2 months ago or so, somebody sent me an email from a German university. He said he was hosting the so-called Kritis document. This is a pretty secret draft document on the protection of electronic infrastructure in Germany. This is a document, these kinds of infrastructure protection thing has been running in the US for years now, and it's to some extent it is a means for FBI and secret services to invade the civilian parts of the net, to get their hands in with the attitude we must protect our information infrastructure, and so the FBI has to watch all net nodes in critical infrastructure. This document, German officials and authorities did not especially like that this document was full text on the net. So they didn't want to pressure the guy on the other hand directly. So they got him with the copyright angle. If he had the copyright to this document to publish it, and it's always difficult, you know, to say who has the copyright if certain authorities have worked together. So this guy sent me an email and said they want me to take this document down. I don't want to take it down. So we just started a very quick and simple mail action, and after that, the Kriti's document had several other homes on the net. It was based on 12 servers in 5 different countries, and we're just waiting for them to take action. This is a way you can fight censorship pretty easily on the net. The point is, everybody can do it, and what Nazis see as censorship can be fought the same way. So it just depends on which side are you on and for whom do you fight.
Well, I think what you said now, that brings us to hot stuff. Hot stuff means here about informations no other one has. And you figured out some very, very critical informations about the mobile net, I think it's a mobile net, in Germany. And I think, please tell us about what's going on and what's going on with the secret services.
Well, to make the story short, back in 1989, I was in possession of a document that was called Infopol 98. It was a secret document of European police, of the police coordination working group of the EU Council, and it was more or less a checklist how to wiretap all modern networks, from GSM to plain old telephone systems to the internet. It was, so to say, a catalogue of wishes by law enforcement authorities and state security agencies, of course, because they always push the police in front, and behind you have the MI6 or the Bundesnachrichtendienst or some other spooks, as we call them. So what did we do with this document? I wrote a few articles for German eSign Telepolis around it, and then we decided to publish it full text. And first of all, people wouldn't believe it, that this document was true. We couldn't have done otherwise to prove it, that it is true, than publishing it full text on the net. So it was open to critical comments to anyone. After a while, the rest of the journalist camarilla in Europe discovered that this document was no falsification and that these plans of police and state security agencies were true plans. So some kind of scandal arose from that, and in the end, the police, surveillance police and national security agency surveillance plans they passed European Union Parliament, but the document was never signed by the Council of Ministers of Interior and Justice, because they want to keep these things secret. They want to do it openly. They don't want to show off the first agreement they did with the US. It was 14 EU states and the US signed an agreement about on international wiretapping. So every kind of network should have, by technical standards, a wiretapping interface so they could plug in easily. This passed the European Parliament in the year 1995 in the Council of Fisheries, where people discussed fishery questions, and it was never discussed, and it was it got through as a fait accompli, as they say. This is something all 15 ministers had agreed upon, and it was not necessary to discuss it. This was just a way to evade critical inspection by EU Parliament. This was their way, and there was a scandal. The document was not published earlier than the end of 1996. And this document is about our all civil liberties. No examination, no information of EU Parliament. The Infopol 98 document was a successor document. It had even more technical details in it, and it was a much larger document, and they tried to do it the same way.
They tried to cheat Parliament to get it through in packed into some other law proposals as thick as that and to smuggle it in so nobody would find it. And they, but with the public watching, they couldn't do it this way anymore because we had published it, and it was not only me, it was a German journalist, Christiane Schulz-Gehadutti as well, who had it, and we gave it to our English colleagues, we gave it to our Spanish colleagues before we published it, and we came out in 5 countries nearly simultaneously, so they couldn't. There was no way for them to stop us. In May 1999, they put it into Parliament. They from 45 pages, only 4 pages were left. They kicked out all the critical stuff, put it into annexes to the document they would not publish, and the document just had 4 pages. And they were very, very theoretical and very, you know, nobody would suspect that this is really a document that cuts our civil rights. And what happened? They manipulated European Parliament. They put it on the agenda and off the agenda on a Thursday 5 times. We had people in the Parliament to watch them, how they did it. You can really say it was a conspiration of all of people who would give the secret services of Europe any rights they demanded. The Infopol 98 document was, we must say, written and made by Austrian police during the Austrian EU presidency. It's the worst document I've ever seen, and many people agree on this. And this document was to pass Parliament back in last May. What happened? From the over 600 members of European Parliament, only 150 were present. And from those, more than 90% voted yes. So just the hardliners remained. Everybody else had left Brussels already for the weekend. And when we published this, the Council of Ministers of Interior and Justice would not sign the Parliament's decision because this was a scandal. This was a scandal. Nobody knew what they were doing, and they had the most sensitive. It was in the one of the most sensitive issues, whether you have privacy in your electronic communication or not, whether you can be wiretapped day and night without the warrant or not. And that's the way it went. And we published it on the net, and that was it. And you can say all the print media were way after the internet media because we always can prove to some extent what we say because we can publish the whole document if we have it. So nobody could say, well, this is another press rumor, as Mr. Bangemann said in the European Union Parliament and as they said at the echelon, echelon session they had this spring. This is all press rumors. It is not press rumors. We showed them their own documents on the net.
I think this is such an interesting point that I'm going to make now an open microphone interruption. So if anyone here, the audience, would say anything to that, have their own opinion about what's going on here, please, the open microphone is behind you. You can ask questions now.
You can ask in German as well.
Of course.
We'll translate.
You are so astonished that no one likes to ask questions. Okay. Maybe. Oh, no, okay.
We should have had one person at least.
Yeah. Okay. Then I change into German, just a few seconds. Sie hören hier Radio Froh 105,0 im Rahmen der Ars Electronica und wir senden wiederum live vom Ars-Zelt, vom Free Speech-Zelt von Radio Froh. Und zu Gast hier sind heute Fiona Steinert von Radio Orange und Erich Möchel. Er ist Herausgeber der kritischen E-Mail-Newsletter Q-Depesche und ich sehe jetzt bereits den ersten Wortbeitrag. Noch ganz kurz vorher, wir senden hier auf Englisch, weil Radio Froh ja das offizielle Ars-Radio ist und wir natürlich eine Menge englischsprachiger Teilnehmerinnen und Teilnehmer haben und um hier Chancengleichheit gewähren zu lassen, deshalb auf Englisch. Und natürlich kann die Frage auch auf Deutsch gestellt werden, aber ich weiß es von gestern, dass die Dame des Englischen sehr mächtig ist und deshalb wird die Frage wahrscheinlich auch gleich auf Englisch fortgeführt werden. Bitte.
The question was, you said that they can't say it's press rumors when you can publish their documents. How do you get them?
Mostly by FTP. No, it's just some of them are publicly available. Some of them we found out were publicly available in Denmark, but not in Austria. Others, our Spanish colleague could find, we could not get them. Some of them are in some databases, and you see, yes, there are about 3,000 subscribers to the newsletter. I happen to push out one piece every day or so in my spare time. Many of those people work in the IT section, so they are network engineers, they are database engineers. Well, there are police data, there are IT people even at police databases. There are, or governmental databases, it's not necessarily a secret police database. And so, sometimes somebody stumbles over a document, and then my incoming FTP folder contains another thing I was not aware of that was not there in the morning. And so the only point is, what's difficult is trying to examine this stuff and not to publish disinformation, because the other side is very, they are used to handle information, because this is the main task, to handle information, to distribute information, to give information to their own governments on foreign activities, and to give disinformation and to throw fog everywhere they can. You could see it very easily in the European Parliament. I even can say names. A certain Mr. Hubert Pirker, who is member of the Conservative Party of the ÖVP, and he's one of the members of Europarlament, he was one of those who was deep into this Amphipol complot, and he did it together. He pulled the strings together with a German colleague called Schmidt. His German colleague was from the Social Democrat fraction. And this guy is really a fine fog thrower. When we met for the Echelon sessions, where it was the Human Rights Justice and Home Affairs session. Are we being spied upon by Echelon, yes or no? People like him stand up and try to divert the discussion. They try to get you to discuss things that are nonsense. He tried to push it into the Microsoft Intel surveillance thing, because something came out at that time with Intel Pentium serial numbers and so. That's what they want us to do. Right now, European Parliament will discuss Echelon again. It's about surveillance with satellite dishes.
Open microphone, please, Mr. Parasit.
Sorry, could you once more explain briefly what Echelon is?
Well, this is a worldwide surveillance system consisting of about 120 stations worldwide. Duncan Campbell has done, and Nikki Hager from New Zealand have done, most of the work uncovering this system. This system dates back to the Cold War, to the period after the war, when the Cold War started, and they started to intercept all the communications from the other side. So this system is pretty old, but it has been renewed and put to the very modern and functional stage in the last years. You can say they routinely intercept every information that passes one of the international communication satellites. What they intercept routinely is telexes and faxes, and they do it it's automated. You don't need anybody to control it. Just afterwards, they filter it. What they can't really do is to intercept all voice communication, telephone calls, and have an automatism reading this. This needs too much computing power. But what's going on? Faxes and telexes, you can be sure they will intercept it. Everywhere where there is one of the Intelsat ground stations, you have some other military ground station very close, and they have the same radar dishes pointing to the satellite most of the time, but most of the time you don't see it because they have some kind of radome over it. It's such a round thing. I bet you have seen one in Austria too. We have some of them standing around on some hills, and officially it's a radar warning system for our glorious Air Force. What they really do under those radomes in Austria, nobody can tell, but nobody can prove, but everybody can tell they are routinely intercepting the communications of our neighbors. They spy on Yugoslavia, they spy on Czechia, they spy on everybody around, as do the others. Everybody does it. Every nation does it to a greater or lesser extent. This is this has to do with free speech. This is interconnected in a way that the net is an ideal medium to uncover such a system, because you can communicate very quickly, you can exchange documents very quickly, and you can put these documents on the net they don't like. And that is why they're all everywhere, they are working on laws trying to prevent those things. And I can tell you the point now, how can we prevent the discussion in Germany, how can we prevent neo-Nazi contents from being put on the net? You can't. It's so simple, you can't. If you try to, they will find a server in Tuvalu and set it up there. They don't even have to go there. They can do it by remote control. I can rent an internet server in any country within 10 minutes and set up some stuff I like. This is what Phil Zimmermann, the inventor of the encryption program PGP, said what they are trying to do now. And it's the state that goes after us. It's also the big companies, but first of all, it's the state that is after us, and what they want is there is no enemy on the other side left, so the state turns its power and its surveillance on its own citizens.
That's a good point now to make. Okay, there's a question.
Can you provide some URLs where all these documents you talked about can be found?
Pardon?
Some URLs, some web addresses where all materials you talk about.
Sure,
thank you.
So we do that afterwards. So that's a good point to bring in Fiona again into the discussion about how did the situation change in Austria since the new government for free radio networks?
Yeah, I want to refer to something Erich said before about the possibility of people working on the internet of moving, for example, from one server to another as soon as stuff is forbidden and things like that. I think that's a main difference between the internet and the radio, because if you're working with radio, you need to have the infrastructure in the local area you're working in. you need it there. And as soon as you don't have the infrastructure, you can't just move it to other places, because then you won't reach the people you actually want to reach. So I think what I want to say is that the question of censorship is not only concerning contents, but also concerning infrastructure and if you have it available or not. And that is a point that refers again to the situation in Austria at the moment, that with the shortage of or maybe in the end it will be cut to zero of fundings of free radios. I don't know when exactly, but in the near future maybe we won't be able to finance the infrastructure. So this can be seen from a political point of view, can be seen as a censorship as well.
So that means for example, the government is changing now from an available open space into an affordable open space. If they cut down the money for free radio station, it means no one or no free radio station can afford the running of the station. That means some kind of censorship in a different way, on a different base.
Yeah, I think it's another level of censorship. I mean, of course, we are trying to find other ways of funding or of financing the stations. But the important point is that we think it is a responsibility of the state as well to provide these open spaces, or at least to provide the fundings to create these open spaces in an autonomous structure and in our own ways. But as I said before, I think this is a way of a very direct way actually to cut down projects.
And is there any awareness in the government why free radio station should stay on air?
That's the question.
I don't know.
You can just answer no.
No, okay, there's no awareness. Okay.
No, I mean, there are reasons. Free radios are broadcasting, of course, special kinds of contents that are maybe not really what the new government wants to hear. So there you have the censorship on the content level again.
We have another question from the audience.
Yeah, I'd just like to add something to what Fiona Steiner said, that can even be considered farther, that even the access to licenses, which is, it's not only money to run infrastructures, but also they are now going to change all the authorities who will distribute licenses and the criterias too. And that's just to add to what Fiona said. It's not only that one can give you money or not give you money. They normally, if we follow these ideas of free access to information and to express information, also that's one thing. But the other thing is even one level above or below, a basic level, who has the right to define criteria to have access to licenses, to frequencies, which is a common good, but where the reglementations and what there is planned, it's a fog too, a sort of a fog. Nobody knows what's going to happen, but they will use the same criteria as for telecommunication, also for broadcasting. But anyway, we can wait for some development which is not very keen for free access to licenses and frequencies.
I mean, it's quite clear what the criteria are going to be, or what the government is aiming at. It's the criteria of the market, of the free market.
I have another question.
Please.
To Erich, how do you follow the situation of filtering of information, such as known from AOL, that they only mirror a part of the internet and not the whole thing. What do you think is coming up here?
I think this is just a business model. This is a business model. Bertelsmann Group favors highly in Europe content filtering and rating system. There is for 3 years now, the W3C, the World Wide Web Consortium, this is one of the internet standards organization, has been under pressure from governments, EU governments, plus Bertelsmann Group, who want to capitalize on clean internet access to develop a filtering and rating system. So you could say this stuff is from AA to from 1 to 5. 5 is XXX rated stuff, hard pornography. 1 is absolutely free for anybody to see who can access a computer. So what happened after 3 years, they have those criteria to some extent ready. Who has registered for this content filtering and rating system? It's the best means to find hardcore pornography on the net, because only hardcore pornography sites have registered, because they are proud of being hardcore and they want the 5, so people would believe they see the real stuff there. And there is just pornography on it and absolutely free children's sites. And there is nothing in between, because you can't rate content, what we have in our brains, what we understand, what we communicate, in a scale of 1 to 5. The W3C knew that. Bertelsmann knows that as well. But they try to hold up they try to spread the internet into any family. So what do people fear? Our children will be exposed to all that smut on the net, and pornography will flood into our homes that we can't prevent it. So we'll establish the legend of a working content filtering and rating system, and as in the case of AOL and other providers, they have some kind of filtering. It always works with rules. You see, these are all American values, you see. Even the visible bosom of a woman would be category 2. So stuff you can really see everywhere on every newspaper here in Austria, on some daily newspapers on page 7. This stuff is object to content filtering and rating too. Everybody who has some sense knows this will not work if you do it by keywords, and you do it by keywords like homosexuals or gay or so. There are no more gay rights groups on the net. There is no more discussions about gays. If you filter by Hitler or Heil Hitler, you filter out all texts that contain Heil Hitler, and it could be the most critical text of neo-Nazism, an invective against neo-Nazism. This will be banned by the same filter, because the filters can't distinguish between right and wrong. They can't distinguish between right and left. They can't distinguish between something that is being discussed and something that is being hailed or worshipped. So this will not work. It will always remain a fiction. And if one more example, the IFPI, this is those people who collect money and redistribute it to artists. You know, you pay royalties to them for an underground concert you have with an underground band, and those royalties go to Reinhard Fendrich, because that's the way of distributing the money. So those companies, they are really annoyed about the internet, because the internet allows people to copy music freely. What did they do? They tried to establish a law, to enforce a law in Germany, you must imagine this, that would force every internet provider to put a filter against MP3 files. To set up a filter. So they would, in the name of collecting royalties for artists like Mr. Fendrich or EMI, Warner,
the music lobby, they would force German internet service providers to censor the internet for us all. And this is not the way, I would say, the digital society will work. This is not the way. If they would be allowed to do this. In fact, it was technically not feasible. It would have cost a lot of money. Nobody would have paid it.
Further question?
It's not a question. It's just a short remark on the Echelon system, because and then the rating system, because Echelon also works rating. It also has keywords, which sets in the automatic filtering system. And there have been campaigns by some newsletters to break the system by using those keywords in every mail. What do you think of that?
Won't work. Echelon works differently now. What they do is semantical analysis. They have gone off a bit from the keyword system because it's too easy to trick and they get too much shit in. They can't sort out. So they had to switch to another system, and this is much more dangerous because they create more, it's about they use mathematical algorithms and they create schemes. They have a thing that is called semantic forests that this system would establish connections on the semantical level and not on the key, on the level of a keyword. If I say bomb and president, I'm not in. You know what I mean? That's what people suspected. It's not that easy. And when they filter voice and not faxes and not data, where filtering is much easier, they wouldn't collect everything. They could collect theoretically. But if they go into voice, they already have a suspect and they clearly search him through the system.
So, are there any further questions? I think that's a very, very interesting topic now. I don't know, because I see two Italian hackers, maybe we can bring up a discussion, because I think you have also, you had problems in Italy, you said yesterday, about your internet investigation, let me say, and maybe you come a little bit later, but your opinion to that. I think that would be a very interesting conversation now. Asbesto. Can you say something to this topic?
We just went here. that was the point, because we was in the seminar about streaming. To me, it came an example of something that happened in Italy, what I can say. And it was a fact for ACN.org, European Counter Network, is the network that hosts many mailing lists for squads in Italy, social centers properly. And they had a message in such a mailing list about a Turkish airline. So it was a message for boycotting this Turkish airline because it was in some way connected to the Turkish government and his actions in that time and this time. So there was a thread about that, and the government of Italy came to ACN.org in Bologna and took away the computer, not only the hard disk but the whole computer, and they still don't have it back.
No, they had it back.
Yeah, after some months.
We make many mirrors in all the world.
that
for one news group message.
And that was,
we were one of those mirrors.
That was the madness. Just for one news group message posted from somebody, And we had support for example from the Compagni from Nodo 50 in Spain that mirrored the page. Now they had some other problems related to that. So it's always, we are talking about mailing lists where they are posted messages. So message from somebody, it's not really a source, but anyway, can be somebody that in the association, in the ACN, can be somebody outside, but anyway, searchable on the net, found in this way, and I mean, a computer went out, so.
And everybody can do it, that is the point.
Right.
If there is somebody related to somebody else who has an interest to get this mailing list and these news off the net, just send a mail with a certain content there that can be prosecuted, and they are off.
Right. Yeah, we use it, what many people use it anyway, in the hack meeting list for a period. We was talking about Echelon and those topics, and we filled the mailing list with all the possible keywords. So the archive of the mailing list is filled of those keywords, so just lists, and this can be a nice way to avoid it, maybe, I don't know. Maybe they are pointing on us now.
Do you host DECSS as well?
Yeah.
Ah, I need to, we are mirror number 51. This is one of the main points where countries must decide what kind of speech is allowed, whether code that works as a program would be speech or would be not a matter of speech. And the point is, they are recently, it has been not even a month ago, a court in New York has banned the program from all US websites. You're not allowed to host a program called DECSS. This program can break the copy protection of DVD. And so it's in the interest, you could say the match was Hollywood against the net. It was the seven major film studios, from Disney to Time Warner, who wanted to ban this code because it could break the copy protection of DVD discs, where they wanted to sell their films a second time. So this program spread rapidly on the net. It's now hosted on 31 countries, yeah. And well, you can say there are hundreds of thousands of copies of this program on the net. But the New York court said it's even forbidden to print the code on T-shirts. it's a ruling. You are not allowed to print the code on T-shirts. But the code is everywhere. It is even in any news forum you can imagine, because it's very easy. You copy the code and you post it. It's just a few lines of code. It's not much.
Let me ask, how does the judge of this New York court does affect the whole internet community, not just only the people in America, for example, you in Italy, or we in Austria, or whatever, in Bulgaria?
I don't know if there are Bulgarian mirrors too, yes.
Okay, so there's hope.
The program exists. The cow is out of the barn, as the US say. You can't stop it. You can't stop it. They try to give the impression this is stoppable. It is not stoppable. And why? It was because those people just were too arrogant. They were too arrogant. They did not provide the Linux community with the necessary drivers you would need to get a DVD player running under Linux. So what those poor guys had to do was breaking the scrambling code, and this proved pretty easy. So they had to break it to get a DVD player running on a Linux machine. They didn't do it for harming copyright protection mechanism. No, they just wanted to get their players running. And that's the way they discovered the scrambling code that the film studios used to prevent people, they don't want to see the film, was pretty easy to crack. So they cracked it, and then the crack was there, and the crack spread, and now DVDs can be copied, because there are other ways to copy them too. It's not the only way, but they were after them, and they won in the States, but they lost in the rest of the world.
Please.
Yeah, I would like, yeah, to bring also a discussion that is really for us important. The DCSS is a really nice example to bring now. And yeah, first of all, I have to say that I am happy to see somebody that's optimistic about the freedom on the net. So they are trying to scramble, but they can't really go on. I mean, at least we try to develop something further. And anyway, there is another case connected to the MP3s case that's much bigger, and on the copyright case, and it's the new law in Italy that they did on the 26th of July, and that's the second time I mention it. It's about copyright and about the fact that anybody that wants to release something free, so as a production of himself, shipping it to others, it has to buy a stamp of the CIA with his name and the name of the production being registered to the CIA, also if he's not registered, to register the production, also if you want to release it free. So,
do you talk about code programs?
About everything, about any cultural production of anything. A CD-ROM containing a free code, GPL code. I program and I release everything under GPL, and I am really worried about it. I mean, I have to be registered in this bureaucratic establishment. I mean, structure that I really fight, and I fight it for long, because I am releasing something free of charge for anybody, and there are really heavy sanctions against who try to escape from that, and they talk about 4 years of jail for somebody that is get caught in being recidive.
So
really, that's a real low.
Let us talk about that. 4 years of jail, that means the scenery has changed considerably, or it's going to change considerably throughout the whole internet community in the world. So let me give us an overview about, and the forecast, what will go on, or what's the strategies against that?
Right now in Italy, it's there is a big movement against this. I mean, it just came out. There are many meetings. One is happening on the 16th of September in Florence, organized by the same guys that organized with us the Hack meeting. And yeah, there is also in Spain, as I know, Nodo 50 is focusing on it. And I mean, there are realities that are trying to get out of it, a big fight. So producing CDs of MP3s by authors that release the music free, as well videos, as well whatever, code, pieces of code. I mean, to fight this scramble, because it's the right word. They are using a scramble to limit the possibilities that are given to us from the techniques. Because you can talk about money on a distribution of music or video or whatever, but you can talk about it in the 80s, when to have a CD distributed in the USA from Europe, I needed a producer that paid for me something and invested some money on me. But right now, it's possible to copy a file all across the net. So it's possible. So we can talk about natural law, Hobbes, I don't know, whatever. I mean, if it's possible, why scramble it? I mean, and I am optimistic at the end, because it's possible, and we see projects like not only Napster but Freenet that actually is going to be developed in France with they released it with a really nice article. It's L'Anarchie au Debout, about our times and Freenet, how it's growing on. It's a system that make you able to share all the material you have on the hard disk without being recognized. So your computer is not reachable, so can't be really recognized where is it and which IP number has. That would be nice if it works. I never saw it working still now. I tried to make it work.
It will work.
Yeah,
they get Napster off the net, and they get 10 times iMesh for it. They get the next model. So if, let's say it in a polemical way, if somebody dares to stand in the way of technical progress, he will be washed away, whether it's a Hollywood studio, whether it's a state, whether it's some law enforcement agency. They will get washed away because nobody can hold it up. Nobody can stop it, really. They can do it for a while. They can put people into jail, but they will not succeed. They will not succeed because they can't control the whole flow of information that is produced daily worldwide. And that is their utopia. This is the spook's utopia. We can control the whole flow of information by technical means. That's what they think, that is what special parts of them intend, and that's what they are working on. Theoretically, yes, but they won't be stopped by us. No, they won't. They will be stopped by industry after a while. If they get in their way in their business, they won't have the support in the next years. Until now, I just tell you an example. Right now, in the European Telecom Standards Institute, new technical schemes are being developed. Roughly said, they want to build surveillance interfaces technically into any digital communication system, from GSM to GPS to plain old telephone system, anywhere. They want to do it by technical means. They have the support in those groups, in those standards groups. You have all telecom industry people, Alcatel, Siemens, Nokia, everybody sends people there. They sit there with policemen and with people from the secret services, and they do those standards. Now they try to integrate the internet into this. They already have the GSM wiretapping standard ready. They have the standards ready for surveillance of our ISDN networks. They know where they can plug in. More and more technical apparatus is being produced by those companies that already complies to this standard of the ETSI, of the Telecom Standards Institute. But they ask the Internet Engineering Task Force. This is one of the self-governing bodies of the internet. It's those people who have developed the net. Those people have developed the net with their requests for comments. This is a series of more than 1,500 huge technical papers where they always integrated new standards into the internet technology, so it would be the same worldwide. Otherwise, the net would not work. If people wouldn't follow the standards worldwide. So this body, the IETF, was asked at the Telecom Standards Institutes in the US, in Japan, in Europe, to work with police and the traditional telecom industries to develop wiretapping surveillance standards for the internet. Sorry, the IETF said, we don't cooperate in any work that makes our networks insecure, because what they are doing is breaking the security of the networks so police and spooks can log in. At those points of interception that are designed for police, for law enforcement and state security agencies, as always, everybody else can break in too, because They are made for this reason. You can't get into the network. Yeah. So if police can get in, you can get in too.
Yeah. Right, and that was the case of also of PGP, and that's the case of crypto anarchy. So they were really scared when it came out, PGP, that was able to crypt anything without any possibility. So it's mathematics. Yeah, without any.
They are up against mathematics.
Yeah,
and that's the point why I'm optimistic.
Yeah,
because
me too. I do
you
agree.
You can't win against logic.
So, are there any questions from the audience? Any further questions? Because then I think now we are, or we've got to know a few about what's going on the internet scene. Let me come back to you, to the free radio stations. And we talked about the future, about what may go on in the future. What do you think when you think of the political situation, when you think of the finance situation, when you think of the way how society is changing? What will be the scenery in the future for free radio stations in Austria, or maybe in a context of European community?
Yeah, I think first of all, the situation has changed in that way that at the moment maybe the main point of activity is aiming at has to change from the contents to simply the way how to go on to see how financing how ways of financing can be found, etc. So this will have an impact on what is going on in free radios, because I think the way of financing has an impact on what contents can be afforded, so to say, and also on the question of what you're concentrating on, what you have the resources and the powers for, changes what is going on in all the different projects within them. So
let me ask, is there other talks about program exchange, for example, building up a news line for just only free radios in Austria, or making the same technical standards to make program changes? I think that will reduce costs and raise the standard.
Yeah, of course, there are a lot, and I think that's also some kind of consequence. There's a lot of projects and ideas on how to connect different resources and to use them on the same level. So to have the possibility to use resources that are in other projects. And I think that's also the perspective that's necessary, not only within Austria, but also on a European and worldwide level, to see how other projects are working, to exchange experiences and get inputs from other stations and the conditions they are having in other countries, for example, and to learn from them.
And what are the strategies for getting public awareness? Because if, I say, free radio stations are constantly ignored by the government, or less than ignored by the government, I think if we will ask people, for example, in Linz and Vienna, who knows Radio Orange, who knows Radio Throw, I don't know if there are more than 50% who really knows that this station exists.
I think another issue of program exchange, and we had this in our discussion yesterday, is the focus on campaigning. And we have to be aware of the fact that we can use much more resources than just our own ones. We can in fact, the free radios in Austria, for example, are the only ones who can broadcast all over Austria. No other radio, except for the public, of course, can do that. So, what we have to do is really use these possibilities we have.
Thank you. I think we are now coming to an end of this very, very interesting discussion, and we go further on in our program with German. And the next broadcast will be, the next discussion will be in about 10 minutes, and it's called Consortium Netzkultur mit Winfried Fritsch und Gabi Keplinger. So now I'm changing the moderation into German, but I see now it should go on further in English. Is this right? Okay. Dann für alle, die jetzt zuhören bei Radio Froh, Sie haben es eben gehört, wenn Sie des Englischen mächtig sind, und von dem gehen wir ja hier bei diesem Programm als offizielles Ars Radio aus. Die nächste Diskussion wird ebenfalls auf Englisch stattfinden. Das heißt, bleiben Sie dran. Wir haben, oder kommen Sie einfach hierher in das Free Speech Zelt von Radio Froh, denn wir haben noch einige wenige Plätze frei. Wir haben jetzt gerade eine hochkarätige Diskussion gehabt mit Erich Möchel und mit Fiona
Steinert.
Und wir haben auch Publikumsbeteiligung gehabt. Das heißt, es soll so weitergehen. Bis dahin spielen wir einige Takte Musik und dann geht es wieder weiter in ungefähr 10 Minuten, wie gesagt, mit Konsortium Netzkultur Winfried Fritsch und die Präsidentin der Stadtwerkstatt Gabi Keplinger. Danke fürs Kommen.
Free Speech Camp
live.
Radio Froh im Rahmen der Ars Electronica 2000.